you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at laist.com/sweeps.
And as part of KPCC's continuing coverage of COVID-19 on Fresh Air coming up at noon today, right after Air Talk, New York Times reporter Jeffrey Gettleman will be talking about what he's seeing in New Delhi, where, of course, the COVID-19 crisis is playing out in just terrible proportions. Jeffrey Gettleman of the New York Times reporting from New Delhi. You'll hear what he describes coming up at noon on Fresh Air here on KPCC. But right now, we turn our attention to a proposed revamping of math standards for public schools in California. Joining us to talk about what's contemplated and the steps that still need to happen before this is adopted is Los Angeles Times education reporter Howard Bloom. Howard, good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Larry?
I'm doing very well, thanks. The big takeaway that I got from reading your piece in the Times today is that this proposal, in an effort to create equitable opportunity amongst public school students of different math ability, is to do away with tracking until students are in the junior year of high school. And describe a little bit the reasons for this proposal.
The reason for this proposal is that a lot of students are doing very badly in math and math-related fields, including science. So if you were to go to a high school in some areas, particularly in a low-income community, you might be able to count on one hand the number of students who are testing as proficient in math or who are in upper-level math courses. So what the people behind this reform are saying, that the current math system is working for a very small number of students. And even for those students, they are getting a strong grounding in calculations, but not in a real-world understanding of math. So that is the motivation behind this. And the idea is that you want to create on-ramps to higher math for everybody. So they would contend that the tracking begins very early in a student's career in elementary school, and that students are essentially cut off from math attainment, which they philosophically believe is within the reach of nearly all students. They're cut off very early on, and they want to stop that. And so their solution, and they say there's evidence to document that this can work, is to put all students in a non-ability level or non-achievement level group class, and then work with students at different levels. So the teacher has to differentiate between what some students in the class are getting and others, but they might work together on the same big idea.
One of the things I recall from the many years ago when I was in LA public schools is that we did have some changes in the tracks year by year, that students did move up into advanced math tracks. There were some that struggled that would fall back to a lower level. It did seem to me that this was not fixed and immutable based on what sort of tracking began earlier on. Has that, to your knowledge, largely fallen away? And do these tracks sort of get set in stone throughout a student's school career?
I think it can vary from place to place, school to school, district to district. When LA Unified had year-round education, and if you were on track C, track C was noted for pretty much not having any advanced courses. So you were locked into a bad schedule, and you would have to change your schedule where you were in a year-round schedule, which is kind of difficult to do once you're locked into a particular schedule. Those were in the days of year-round education, and the same group of kids were not coming at the same time because of overcrowding. But as State Senator Ben Allen pointed out yesterday, LA Unified is mostly students of color, so we're not seeing a system where necessarily white kids are on one track and Latino kids are on the other. And he posed the question, well, if some Latino kids, for example, are ready to move faster, why should they not be allowed to do that? And that was one of the concerns that he had.
I was also wondering about, it sounds like just philosophically, there's the view that all students have equal math potential. Does that philosophy underlie this approach, Howard?
I think it largely does. And the writers of the framework point to research on the elasticity of the brain, that what your brain can do and absorb changes based on the exposure it has. And we know there's some truth to this, right? I mean, otherwise, why did you and I read books every night to our children?
Sure.
Endlessly, because we wanted to expand their capacity for learning. I mean, if it was all immutable and natural, that exercise would have been unnecessary, right? And so they are contending that the same is true for math, and that they want math to be within the reach of everyone. Now, there also are people who are genuinely gifted. Mozart probably was genuinely gifted, right? And there is a debate over where that dividing line is, and I'm not sure research has settled that issue, although I think you're having researchers on there on this program who believe they have the answers to this. I don't know if it's the same answer, but it is a hotly debated topic, and finding that fine line between making sure that everyone has the access to reach their full potential and also allowing students wherever they are, whether they're at a lower level or a higher level, to be challenged at all times, that's not an easy thing to do.
I just well remember some of the great math students of my childhood, and I could have studied all day. I could have had every enrichment. There was no way in the world I was going to reach the level of what those very highly gifted math students did. Their brain just had that. It was clear the ability that they had, and there's no way I was ever going to get there. Howard Bloom covers education for the Los Angeles Times. Joining us is professor of mathematics education at Stanford University and co-writer of the proposed framework that we're discussing, Joe Bowler. Professor, thank you very much. Good to have you with us today.
Thank you for having me on the show.
So let's talk about this. First of all, the tracking element of this. I'm sure that, you know, for many parents who have kids that are gifted in math, their concern is, you know, how will they be occupied when they're in these less advanced math classes and their brains are yearning for to rev higher at, you know, more challenging math problems. How would those students be accommodated?
Well, I should start by saying we absolutely know that high-achieving students need high and challenging work. There's no question of that. And what we also know, though, is tracking is a very blunt tool, and the way that it's set up in the system has resulted in huge inequities. And in many middle schools, it's decided in sixth grade which sort of lane you're on. And from that point onward, kids' future in STEM is determined. Now, that would be okay, perhaps, if we could do it fairly, or if we thought none of those sixth graders could ever take calculus, but unfortunately, that's not the case. So in the new framework, what we're saying is, let's look at this system and see if we can come up with better ways. And I can tell you that schools already have come up with better ways, and one way is the learning is much more personalized. So students can take courses at their own pace. And actually, some students take lots of courses early on, and they've, you know, got into a high level of maths early, but not through tracking. Through the school offering the kids to work through the materials and then go on to another course if they've finished it. So all this concern that we're hearing from parents who are students who are very high achieving, we really care about those kids, but we don't think that this sort of very blunt system that's been working in schools has been working well, not for them or for other students.
How do you individualize it, though, in the way you're talking about, if you've got a math teacher who's got 30 students mm-hmm. in the class and she's trying to, you know, look at all, you know, this very widespread in math ability, how can she possibly working through her lesson plan accommodate all those different levels?
So there's different approaches that are used, and I can tell you about a couple of them. One is we don't teach maths in such a narrow way of let's go through lots of small questions. We actually open it up to be bigger problem-solving questions, and when we do that, it actually those questions allow kids to work at different levels and high achievers to really go to the sky. So that's one approach, but it takes a pretty skilled teacher I would say, to implement that approach. Another is we live in a very different world now with huge technological tools that are available. So there are personalized learning systems in schools, which students go onto a computer, they are assessed, their mathematical achievement is assessed, and then they're given work depending where they're at. It's not this whole class is going to work at this pace on these questions. It's actually personalized to individual kids. But the big difference between that and tracking is you get further if you do more work. So it's what I see is a much fairer system. And so, you know, this framework is really not intended to be all about setting out the solutions for tracking and getting all kids a better opportunity. It's really about how do we teach maths really well and how do we make it more creative, more open, more meaningful for kids. But we recognize that we have to say something about this because the system that is working in schools right now is just not working very well for a lot of students.
Also, one of the points here, and if I mischaracterize it, please correct me, but it seems that it de-emphasizes calculus as sort of the, you know, the ultimate, what's going to help the student get into an elite school, and that's sort of the holy grail of high school education. If I'm characterizing that accurately, what sort of a change does this contemplate for calculus?
So what we're actually doing is saying, as other states are too, there's a lot of important mathematics. Mathematics is a very rich and broad subject. And calculus is one pathway. Great, let's keep calculus. And kids who really want that algebraic preparation, a lot of algebra, and go into a calculus pathway, fantastic. Nobody's taking that away. Nobody's de-emphasizing calculus. What we are saying is, let's make other pathways possible. And the particular one that we're emphasizing in the framework is a pathway where students would take data science, very mathematical and important subject, and statistics. And so this is a very exciting initiative that's actually modernizing high school mathematics in important ways. And we're very fortunate in California because the entire UC and CSU system sent out emails to 50,000 high schools last year saying, we will accept kids who've taken data science and statistics, and they will be valued just as highly as kids who've gone down that calculus path.
We're talking with Joe Bowler, Stanford University Professor of Mathematics Education and co-author of the California State Framework that's under review right now. When we come back, we'll talk with UC Irvine, Distinguished Professor of Mathematics, Svetlana Hitomirska. We'll talk with her about her take on these proposed new guidelines. And I'd like to hear from you, particularly if you're a parent of a school-age kid, what you think about the proposed changes. We're at 866-893-KPCC, 866-893-5722. You can tweet at AirTalk, post on the AirTalk Facebook page, or post on the AirTalk page, kpcc.org. We'll be back in 90 seconds. It's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Great to have you with us as we talk about proposed changes to California's public school math guidelines. It would do away with tracking of math students up until the junior year of high school. It would de-emphasize calculus as the ultimate goal in math education and attempt to provide some more pragmatic uses of mathematics education in a student's life. What do you think about this? Critics have a number of points they're making about it, and we'll hear some of those momentarily. We're at 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Joining us now from UC Irvine, Distinguished Professor of Mathematics, Svetlana Hitomirska. Professor, thank you very much for being with us. What are your concerns about this proposal?
Thank you for having me on the program. So first of all, I want to say that listening to me, you probably think that I'm a recent immigrant, but it's not so. I lived here in South Orange County in Irvine for almost 30 years, and the accent never goes. And all these 30 years, I taught graduate and undergraduate students at UC Irvine. And 29 of these years, I was an involved parent of a public school student. I have kids of very different ages, as you can infer. One kid is still at school. And finally, 20 of those years, I was heavily involved in teaching interesting math to K-12 kids on a volunteer basis, running math circles and other outreach, organizing competitions, coaching math counts teams, you name it. So I have experience, related experience in three different ways. As a professor, I deal with the product. I deal with teaching future STEM professionals, with future mathematicians, future engineers, and so on. I have a lot of experience as a parent, often as a frustrated parent, and I have experience, a lot of experience dealing with kids who want extra challenge in math. So my take on this, that this proposal does have good elements. I think the proposed data science course is really good, and it will be good to implement. But the major parts of this proposal will have a disastrous effect. They will have a disastrous effect on teaching mathematics for all, on equity in particular, and on California's supply of STEM professionals. We will simply not have enough. Because currently, so the data science pathway is really good for many students. I have no doubts about that. It's about time we start teaching practical skills like that in high school. But removing the calculus pathway, and effectively the proposal does that for California public school students, is definitely a complete disaster. And why do I say removing calculus pathway? Calculus is listed there. Because the current proposal basically ends 10th grade with at most algebra 1 and geometry. So algebra 2, pre-calculus, or whatever current courses that replaces them, all have to be taken in grades 11 and 12, and they have to be taken before calculus. But the thing is that a student needs definitely at least 2 years of really good algebra 2 and pre-calculus or above honors level material to comprehend calculus. There is no way around it. So there is a way around it for gifted students, definitely. But for the majority of students that the writers of this proposal supposedly care about, there is no way around it. They basically propose to remove preparation. They say they don't want to rush students into calculus, and in effect, they do, because basically students who still want to take calculus in high school in order to be competitive with students from other states, or just because they are ready for that. Maybe they have been ready for that 5 years ago. We see a lot of such students. They basically need to rush to take algebra 2 based material, deep algebra based material in 1 year. This will basically make calculus impossible for those who do not get their math training on the site anyway, and many the California students now do. So basically, okay. this increases the inequity, because students whose parents do not help them get some resources on the site will just not be able to do it.
Professor Joe Bowler of Stanford University, your response to 2 years not being enough to do that if this starts in the junior year of high school?
My response is, I'm really not sure where that's being read into the framework. What we know is that students can take algebra, algebra 2, geometry, calculus, and have all of that algebraic strong preparation in high school. All we're doing is saying other students could take a different pathway in data science. We do have concerns, and I think this is speaks to this. We do have concerns that half of the kids are taken off that calculus pathway in sixth grade, and we're trying to remedy that, but nobody's taking away that strong algebraic pathway to calculus.
Let's take a listener call from Charlotte in Mid-City, Los Angeles. Good to have you with us. Charlotte, I understand you're a recent high school graduate, just started college. Congratulations. So what's your thought on this?
Thanks. Yeah. So I'm actually studying math at college, and I really decided to do that because I took calculus in high school. And I thought it was an incredible like culmination of all the math I'd previously learned in high school. I had a lot of background in Algebra 1, Algebra 2, and pre-calculus, and I felt like those classes were really difficult, and I honestly questioned my abilities. But when I got to take calculus, it felt like everything had finally come together and made sense in the math world, and kind of like I had a newfound appreciation for everything else that I had previously learned.
Do you think that you could have, if you were in a public school under this proposed framework, and you didn't break out, so to speak, until your junior year of high school with going the calculus route, could you have done that within a couple of years?
I don't think so, because when everything's kind of on your own, I'm going to be honest, I would have probably slacked off a little more. And also, I thought it was really, really difficult. I thought, you know, taking Algebra 2, I was like, this is the hardest math class I've ever been in my life. And honestly, I still think that, and I'm a math major at UC Berkeley. But I think really having the guidance of the courses and an outline curriculum with my teachers is incredibly helpful. But I do sometimes wish that, you know, there were opportunities for me to advance or kind of slow down and focus on the things that were difficult, you know, for me, if I had like a more like specific curriculum.
Charlotte, did you go to a public or a private school?
I went to public school my whole life.
All right, very good. And I'm just wondering, do you think that your parents might have looked for another option than public school if there had not been the math tracking for you?
I think if anything, they probably would have pushed me to do whatever the most advanced opportunity was. I think they always wanted me to go into like math or science, and they saw that I was good at it. I always ask a lot of questions in the subject, so I'm sure they would probably have guided me towards the more like difficult side of things. But not all parents kind of like value math as much, and I completely understand that. I think a lot of like my parents' generation didn't have the same sort of upbringing and experience learning math that I was able to have. So I don't know if other students would be able to have the opportunity to kind of like be pushed in that direction.
Charlotte, I appreciate your call. Thanks very much. We'll continue with our guests on Air Talk as we look at this proposed new math framework for California public schools. We have with us co-author of the framework, Stanford Professor of Mathematics Education, Joe Bowler, from UC Irvine, Distinguished Professor of Mathematics, Svetlana Hitomirska, and also with us, Howard Bloom, who covers education, reporting for the Los Angeles Times. We're taking more of your calls. We'll be back in 1 minute. Great to have you with us on Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Our focus on proposed new guidelines for teaching mathematics in California public schools. Let me read a couple more comments. Bill in the San Gabriel Valley, a frequent commenter on our Air Talk page, says, pragmatic, quote, use of math. While I've never used calculus in my professional life, understanding the concepts of calculus are very useful. What is the negative of calculus as a goal? Granted, I don't expect everyone to take it, but STEM majors really need it. Even though I had calculus in high school and passed the AP exam for a semester, I took calculus again in college because I was away from home and one less class to worry about enabled me to enjoy the other aspects of college life. Bill, in the San Gabriel Valley, Professor Bowler, what about, you know, Bill's point that STEM majors really need this, and they sort of need to be pointing to this earlier in their academic life?
STEM majors do benefit from calculus. They would also greatly benefit from data science. And part of what we're suggesting is colleges need to also pay attention to the fact that kids can take different mathematical pathways. It's perfectly possible that somebody could go into data science. There's a lot of mathematics in there, matrices and linear algebra, and think, you know what, this maths is my passion, and I'm going to take calculus, and I'm going to go on to be an engineer. So what we're trying to do is say, yes, there should be different options for kids. Some kids can take calculus. Some kids might want to take both data science and calculus. On the question of, you know, can we specialize later, it doesn't have to be that way, and that's really not what the framework is saying. Schools can take a personalized approach with their kids, and they can go on a calculus route and do that earlier through personalized materials. Let's not, though, have that be a very crude decision of which students get that approach and which don't. Let's not use blunt tools to decide things for kids that will determine the rest of their lives. This is not a small decision we make when we put kids into these different math pathways. We have to do it really carefully. We have to do better than we're doing right now.
Let me read some more listener comments. This is from Christine in South Pasadena. I went through the public school system, did calculus twice in high school and college, never used it, and I agree they should make the curriculum more pragmatic and less calculus focused. Don in Carpinteria said, I was a math teacher for 35 years, retired now. Saw a lot of changes in mathematics and individualized instruction prior to computer integrated systems. I'd like to know how many of those on this state board have practical teaching experience. Professor Bowler, can you give us just sort of a generalized sense of how many have been classroom teachers?
Yes, I can tell you that this framework was actually written and directed. There was a small writing team, five of us, but there was a committee that really decided the direction and everything that was in this framework, all of them classroom teachers. Some of them are in leadership positions now of district or county leaders, but everybody has classroom experience, as do I. I was a math teacher myself and taught in high school and middle school years. So there's no shortage of classroom experience. I don't think I don't think we have any shortage of that at all.
Yeah, Marion in El Sereno says, I went to high school in Ireland. Their system doesn't take into account if you're a math genius. Everyone learns algebra, trig, geometry, and calculus. They have a lower version and an honors version. I think this is something California should consider. Joe Bowler, what would the challenge for that be in having every student go as far as calculus?
It could be done if we changed the way courses were structured and so there wasn't so much in every course that really puts barriers in front of kids, and we didn't give kids the message that they're not maths people, and we brought in high-quality teaching. Yes, it could be done. And, you know, I myself went to school in England, and I also learned all mathematics. There wasn't separate courses of algebra and geometry. So, you know, different countries are doing things differently with a lot of success. And we could do that, but I still say that it doesn't all have to go to calculus.
All right. Professor Svetlana Hitomirska of UC Irvine, you have some suggestions you think would be better than what's contained in these guidelines. Briefly, what would you recommend?
Well, I do think that California math education needs a reform, and the main reform should be in how we prepare our teachers. So there is this famous quote by Bernard Shaw that those who can do, those who can't teach, right?
Yes.
And there is a continuation of this quote that is less well known, which is those who can't teach, teach the others how to teach, right? And there is a lot of truth to it. Please don't take offense, but there is a lot of truth to it. And we have some really wonderful math teachers, but the majority of our teachers don't really know math at the level they should. And perhaps those programs where one teacher teaches a lot of kids of different levels in the same classroom can be run by really gifted teachers, but who know the material so deep deeply that they can provide guidance according to 12 different lesson plans. Perhaps some teachers like that exist, but there are very few. And the majority of our teachers, of course, everyone who taught any class knows that how difficult it is to teach a class with very different levels of skills. It's basically impossible to do effectively, no matter what individual pathways. It is difficult to help all students effectively. And this is known by everyone, right? But basically, it is really important, and what the change that is really needed is that teachers and do know math at several grades above, several grade levels above what they teach, so that they can teach it deeply. And then basically any program will be good, right? And so basically the proposal is that teachers should be accredited in math periodically.
Okay.
They should be able to pass the exam at a certain okay. level.
And I'm sorry, I got to interrupt you there because we're out of time. I appreciate it, though, so much. That's UC Irvine Distinguished Professor of Mathematics, Svetlana Hitomirska. Also with us, Joe Bowler, Stanford University Professor of Mathematics Education, and Howard Bloom, whose piece today, LATimes.com, details what's going on with the controversy over this. DDC writes on the page, as an educator myself, I find several of the assumptions apparently being made here to be without foundation. First, to leap from neuroplasticity to an assumption that all people have equal gifts is completely without foundation. Anything elastic has a limit. You can share your comments on the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Tell you what's to come in the second hour momentarily.
The LAS Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at las.com/sweeps.